You're listening to the Loyalty Minute, the show that helps you build better customer loyalty and more valuable user engagement with your host, Rob Gallo.
Welcome, loyal listeners, to another episode of the Loyalty Minute. I'm your host, Rob Gallo, and today I'm eager and excited to chat with Peter Voss. Peter is a pioneer in AI who coined the term artificial general intelligence. He's the CEO and chief scientist at Igo.ai, currently offering a highly intelligent and hyper-personalized chatbot with a brain for large enterprise customers. Please welcome to the show, Peter. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So for those who don't know who you are personally, and then we'll get into the business side of it, give us a little background on Peter Voss and how you got to where you are today.
Yes, certainly. So I started out as an electronics engineer, started my own electronics company, and then I fell in love with software. And my company turned into a software company. I developed an ERP software suite. Company was pretty successful. We went from the garage to 400 people and did an IPO. So that was really exciting. It's when I exited the company that I had enough time and money on my hands to say, what big project do I want to tackle? And what struck me is that software really is quite dumb. And I'm saying that, you know, I was very proud of my software that we developed. It was pretty good. But still, software doesn't really have any common sense. It doesn't think or reason, you know, and if the programmer didn't think of something, it'll just crash or give you some silly error message. So I really want to figure out how we can bring intelligence to software. How can we make software intelligent? So I took 5 years to study intelligence, all different aspects of intelligence. How do children learn? How does our intelligence differ from animal intelligence? What do IQ tests measure? You know, all sorts of different aspects. And I then came up with a design for a thinking engine or a reasoning engine, thinking machine that can think and learn and reason the way humans do, at least in principle. And that's really how I got into artificial intelligence. I then started a research company, and for several years, we basically just concentrated on building various prototypes. And eventually, we commercialized this in the call center space. And, you know, that's what I've been doing for the last 20 odd years.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, as we were mentioning before I hit the record button, I love the artificial intelligence space. I think it's just really exciting. And there's some great things coming out on the horizon. So obviously, the name of the show is the Loyalty Minute. And everything really ties back to loyalty, customer loyalty, brand loyalty. So before I get into anything else, because I really want to dig deep into what your business does, but just from a high level, from Peter Voss as a consumer, what does loyalty mean to you, to a brand that you might be loyal to, and why?
Yeah, I mean, it's do I go the extra mile to do business with a company? You know, talking about consumer as a consumer, you know, am I willing to potentially pay extra, or am I not even going to look elsewhere for a product because I'm so satisfied, you know, with a particular company? And I mean, I could share like two experiences that come to mind. There's a Japanese restaurant here in Los Angeles called Kafuni, and you know, I like the food and the service so much that, you know, when I moved away from Marina Del Rey, where they're located, I would still once a week or so, you know, travel first 30 minutes to get there, whereas it wasn't walking distance. And then I moved even further away, and I, you know, drive 45 minutes to get there because they just had excellent salmon and service. And, you know, loyalty, I'd go the extra mile, literally, to do business with them. And another example that springs to mind, I got one of the first Model 3 Teslas about 4 years ago, the Model 3 when it came out. And it was just such an amazing experience, the delivery process. You basically got there, everything was done online. You got there and they had a little table with your name on it, all the paperwork ready. They helped you download the app. And it was, you know, and then there was like a Starbucks-like coffee service here. What would you like? You know, how would you like your latte? Or, well, I want hot chocolate with skim milk. Yes, sure. And, you know, the whole process was so simple compared to normally buying a car, you know. And so once they downloaded the app and, you know, I had my hot chocolate and just signed electronically whatever I had to sign, they then ushered us into a big open warehouse space. And as I opened the doors, and I still get chills talking about this experience now literally, is there's the car on a carpet with spotlights at the top. And you walk in there and you see this car just, you know, in like a showroom, but, you know, just amazing. And, you know, and then they walk you over to the car, then your app's already working, and, you know, they basically show you how everything works. It was just a phenomenal experience. Now, I don't believe they can afford to do that now anymore. You know, it's probably more pedestrian, but, you know, that experience really sticks with me. All other cars I've bought, and I've bought Porsches and Mercedes and whatever, and it's always been a very unhappy kind of experience, you know, going through car buying. Yes. So, yeah, I would go the extra mile for a Tesla for a whole lot of other reasons as well. But that was just an amazing experience.
Yeah. So, like, I think the key word that you mentioned is experience. And I believe loyalty comes from experience with the organization or company that you're doing business with that gives you an emotional feeling or connection to say that this is how I feel I should be treated. You know, and I'm on episode 104, I think this is. And I use Apple as an example for $1 trillion or $3 trillion company now to be able to get them on the phone and have them walk you through a specific issue that's related to you, as opposed to a generic canned response that says, do this, copy this, cut this, paste this. It's, to me, makes the difference between a company that I would love to do business with than a company like, and I don't mean Microsoft in a bad light, you know, they're big, and but Apple's just as big, if not bigger. But they don't get that customer-centric, customer-focused, customer experience that Apple does. And I think that's obviously the claim to, you know, Steve Jobs in the way he built the business, but that it transcends all the way down to the people that are answering the phone. That's the importance, in my opinion, for loyalty. So let's switch gears now, quick, Peter, and talk about, and I think this might take up the rest of the show, how artificial intelligence can help companies or individuals. When you think about individuals, you know, in the gig economy now, influencers or whoever that are producing their own content, how can artificial intelligence help customers be more loyal to your brand or to your service?
Yes, so I'd first like to talk a little bit about the two types of artificial intelligence. And, you know, as you mentioned, I coined the term artificial general intelligence together with two other people in 2001, actually. And the difference between artificial general intelligence and what we normally see as AI is that what we normally see as AI is narrow AI. So it's basically a programmer who sits down and uses advanced programming techniques, really, to solve a particular problem. You know, so the famous example there would be Deep Blue, IBM's Deep Blue, becoming the world chess champion, or more recently, Google's DeepMind becoming the Go world chess champion. But it's about container optimization or image recognition or whatever. But they are narrow. It's basically solving one particular problem using various so-called AI techniques. But that's not really the original dream of AI. When the term was coined 60 years ago, it was about building thinking machines, machines that can think, learn, and reason the way humans do. And that's what really why we coined the term AGI, artificial general intelligence, to bring us back to that original dream. Now, the reason I mentioned that is narrow AI can obviously help with loyalty. I mean, you can develop big data approaches, categorization, and so on, that can help you with targeted advertising or follow up email or whatever. And if you do a good job at that, then certainly that can enhance the customer experience. But the problem with that is you're still a number, you're still a statistic. In fact, you're very much a statistic with big data approaches. I mean, that's what it's all about, is what bucket can they put you in? You know, are you this kind of consumer or that kind of consumer? Are you happy or unhappy, or what have you bought? You know, how much money do you spend, and that kind of thing. So to really understand the customer and to be able to hyper personalize it to the individual, you actually need more. You need deeper understanding of the particular person's situation. And that is where you really need AGI that can learn from the individual. So to illustrate that, one of our big customers is 1-800-Flowers. And about 4 or 5 years ago, they said, what we want is we want an automated concierge service. When we started off as a small company, we knew all of our customers. You know, they'd walk in the store and we'd know them. We'd know what they liked, who they buy presents for, and what kind of gifts they would buy, and so on. But obviously now with, you know, 10 million plus customers, that's not feasible. How can we do that? And they basically wanted a concierge chatbot. I mean, chatbot is maybe a bit too derogatory a term for that, conversational AI, that could give that hyper-personalized service to individuals. And they tried to do this with conventional AI technology and completely failed. You know, again, it was a sort of statistical approaches. So we built a system for them that provides this hyper-personalization. So it actually learns who you buy a present for. And if you, for example, say, I want to buy some chocolates for my niece's birthday, then our system will actually remember that it's your niece, the relationship, what the occasion was and what the product was, and attach that to the name. And it can use that information in future conversations. So, you know, where's the order for my niece, or when will it be delivered, and so on. So it's that hyper-personalization that I believe can really provide that loyalty, but it needs to be well done, of course.
So let me ask you then, from a technical standpoint, is it gathering the information based on the inputs from the consumer? So it says it knows it's the niece that it's buying the present for, not the wife. Mm-hmm. So it would think in the back end on its own, or it has to be pre-programmed somehow to know that a niece is not a wife and the difference between the two.
Correct. And with artificial general intelligence, that's knowledge the system already has. It already knows about people and relationships and places and products and things like that. So you don't program that every time. You basically build a system like a human. You know, we already, if you hire somebody to work in your contact center, you don't have to explain to them that a niece is not a wife. You know, they already have that.
At some point, they needed to learn way back.
Correct. Yeah. But with a general intelligence, you basically teach the system once that kind of information, and you use it as a basis then for a particular application where you may have different business rules, and that, you know, how you treat customers, for example. If there's, you know, if it's a funeral they're buying something for, then obviously you have a completely different conversation than if it's for a birthday or an anniversary.
Yeah. So again, the difference between the general or the artificial general intelligence understanding, mm-hmm, the difference, it has to be taught at least one time first.
Yes. Correct. But so, it has that ability to be able to learn and to understand and to reason.
Okay, so when you talk about reason, I think of the Watson episode on Jeopardy, which I'm sure you saw, right? And how he was able to get, or how Watson was able to get the questions right, was based on reading into the bits of the question and piecing it together, which I would do the same thing. So that if they're talking about, if the question says queen, and it says, 1745, it'll know in its dialogue, in its history, what the, right. who the Queen of England was in 1745.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting question because, you know, watching Watson do Jeopardy, we think that the process behind is the way humans thought. But actually, it was a very narrow AI, very specifically designed to win Jeopardy. So it was much more a statistical and keyword kind of approach. Watson didn't understand anything in the sort of normal sense. You couldn't have asked anything more, you know, follow-up questions. Why did you come to that conclusion? It was much more a keyword and statistical approach. And in fact, I believe that by far the majority of answers were found in the first paragraph of a Wikipedia article. So that's how much you could actually tune the system to just be good at Jeopardy.
So then the difference between what you say statistical and understanding certain keywords, which, you know, is sort of how people, I think, now think about conversationally anyway, when you hear someone mention, you know, the Queen of England, 1745, something comes to mind, or, you know, you think of, you know, who sailed the ocean blue in 1942. Right? Everybody knows who that is and thinks about it just because it's somewhere in the back of their mind. So what you're saying, though, Peter, is that from the artificial general intelligence that you're creating, how would it know unless it was, I mean, if it was already there, but does it go out on its own and kind of explore and how's it
learn? So I know that the differences are somewhat subtle, but they're actually very important. So one of the things is the system has to be able to deeply understand what is being said. You know, so a complex sentence that you give it to it, it has to actually understand what the meaning is of that. And it has to be able to learn interactively. You know, the example that I gave you that, you know, I want to buy a present for my niece. It needs to now remember that information and to be able to use it in the future. Whereas systems like Watson and so on don't have that ability to remember things. So, you know, deep understanding and memorizing and then being able to use that information in future conversations. So if you come back a week later or, you know, months later or so, it can use that information. Or even using information you learned earlier in a conversation and being able to use it later in a conversation. So to provide that hyper-personalized service, that's that kind of learning, interactive learning of the individual, not as a group, but for the individual, is crucial.
It has to put it in context, though, because if the next person calls up and says, I need to buy a birthday present for my niece, or, you know, my niece and nephew are getting married, you know what I mean? That's slightly different. And again, I don't want to go on a huge tangent, but it's fascinating to me how it works. And I think about, you know, speech recognition is probably maybe on this same path. And I remember 25 years ago, there was a program called Dragon Voice Dictation. And I paid probably way too much for it back then. And you had to actually train it. And you had to actually speak into it over and over and over again until it recognized your voice. And I think that was just based on the patterns. But now I could be in the car and I could hit the button and dictate, you know, a good paragraph or so. And Google's AI is going to get it pretty darn close. 95% of the words that I'm speaking are coming out as text.
Right.
Fascinating. So. Yeah. Do you think, how is that done? Is that learning just from me or collectively on the neural network that everybody is, it's kind of getting how people speak?
Right. So, you know, most of the common systems that we use, Siri and Alexa and so on, they don't learn or adjust to your speech. But there are certain, like you mentioned the Dragon, if you have something that you install on your computer, it can actually have better speech recognition because it is tuned to your particular accent and so on. So it's basically, mapping and adjusting its system to better understand your particular way of saying things. Mm. So training it to be personalized will give you even better results. But speech recognition has improved very significantly over the last 2 years because of these big data machine learning approaches. But there's no understanding. It's a purely statistical thing. There's, you know, you couldn't ask the system of what do I mean by this or any question. It's, you know, it purely translates the sounds that it hears into text blindly.
Yeah, but then again, they start, you know, so now when I'm typing something, it'll come up with the potential the rest of the sentence. So if
correct, but again, this is a purely statistical thing. When you have, you know, trillions of examples in your database, then you kind of know that if you type these two words, chances are you'll be followed by, you know, another three words.
Yeah, interesting. Because I know the guys, I know a group of guys, I worked with a poker company years ago that developed artificial intelligence that plays poker at a super high level. And they ended up beating some group from Alberta on Texas Hold'em, which is interesting because it's incomplete data. It's not a full finite set of data like it is for chess, which is still tough, don't get me wrong.
Right.
Or the... whatever the other game is, I can't think of it.
Well, I mean, even Go is while it's finite, it's just, you know, so many possibilities that it may as well be infinite.
Yeah. Well, the same thing with poker when it's unknown. But then what they do using the neural network is they look at the opponent and the opponent's propensity to call, fold, or raise based on situations that they've experienced in the past. And then they use that against the opponent, which makes it even more difficult,
right?
Take the emotion out of it and play purely statistical, but based on not what the machine knows, but what it knows you are capable of doing or most likely to do.
Right.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Like I said, I love AI. So before we get back into the loyalty aspect, what is your thought on AI for the future, where I know guys like Elon Musk are scared. They think that there's a potential that it could be too powerful of a situation.
Hmm. Yeah. And it's a bit odd then that he probably throws more effort and money at actually developing AI than just about anybody else. So I'm not sure how scared he really is, you know, if he's changed his mind about it.
It might become or could become, you know, I guess like HAL, you know, I mean, when 2001 Space Odyssey in that context.
Well, it's unfortunate that, you know, what we know about future AI, we get from the movies. Mm. And, you know, it doesn't make for a good story if the AI is the good guy. I mean, it's a lot easier to, in fact, I was asked to consult on an AI movie a few years ago, famous producer, and they had the story all laid out. And of course the AI was the bad guy. And I said, well, wouldn't it make the story actually much more interesting if you could show how AI would help humanity and make us flourish, you know? And no, they weren't interested in that at all. You know, it doesn't sell. So that's kind of the stories we get. So that's the default assumption we make. There's actually another sort of really strange dynamic there. There are a number of groups that are dedicated to AI safety that are basically, you know, nonprofits that have become quite big, and they get tens of millions of dollars of funding by basically saying AI is dangerous and we need to do research to basically find how we can manage it. Now, you can raise money for that. And they have, you know, a lot of smart people working for them, coming up with all the different scenarios of what could go wrong. But if you tried to set up a nonprofit organization that would tell you that AI is actually likely to be benign and helpful, you wouldn't get any money for that.
True.
So there's no counter argument really for that. And I've studied this quite extensively, and I've written on that. I've got articles on medium.com about it. And I don't think there's good evidence at all that AIs will be dangerous to us. Apart from the fact that the sort of more pedestrian way of danger, if I can say, basically just bad engineering. If an AI isn't smart enough, if it makes mistakes, that of course can be dangerous, but that's not that it'll purposefully try and take over the world or something. So yes, AI can be faulty and make mistakes, but then it's an engineering problem, you know, like any advanced technology. If it's badly designed, then it can be dangerous or it can, yeah, you know, cause harm. So I don't believe there's any evidence that an AI will on purpose try to harm us, which is really what, you know, what a lot of the scare stories are about.
Yeah, I think it's probably more likely that the level of sophistication that comes from the AI could be used in nefarious ways, which I guess any new technology could be. I mean, obviously, from back in the days when people were, you know, counterfeiting bills, right? From
yes, of course, 1800s, 1900s. But it's not the AI it's a human
aspect, right, of it that uses the AI to the degree that it makes it easier for them to then do something out of the ordinary.
Right, but that comes down to you just want to make sure that you have enough, that you have more good guys than bad guys in the world. Yeah. And or the you know, that have more of the good guys in positions of power. And, you know, that is a huge problem because, I mean, as we're seeing in so many governments, and that I think it's questionable of whether we really have the good guys in charge, you know, whether the good guys get anywhere in politics. So, but that's a whole separate discussion. Now, yeah. I'd actually like to, though, make the point that I think there's some good evidence that AI will actually help us make better decisions and become better people, so that advanced AI or AGI will actually help us solve a lot of the problems that we have. And the obvious ones are, you know, pollution, you know, climate change, poverty, all of that, and disease.
What can it do for affordable healthcare?
Well, I mean, they're very simple solutions to that, actually. I mean, if you look at the, and, you know, that's not what this show is about, the debate is about, but I think it's pretty obvious that the administrative burden is just, you know, is a huge problem in terms of the cost of healthcare. So applying rationality to it, which is, of course, what AI is about. It's intelligence. It's having intelligence and being able to make intelligent decisions. It could help us help more people realize what is actually wrong with these systems, like education and healthcare. Yeah. You know, that basically the administrative burden, for one, is huge. But, you know, there are other things that that can clearly be done to improve the effectiveness of healthcare. So I think we will have, and this, the way I see the future of AI is that we will have what we call a personal assistant. And what I mean by that is it actually should be called personal assistant, because it incorporates three different meanings of personal. The first one is personal, you own it. It belongs to you and it serves your agenda, not some mega corporation's agenda. Mm-hmm. The second thing, it's personal in the sense that it's personalized or customized to you. It knows your preferences, your, you know, your history, your desires, and so on, your values. And the third personal is that it's private, that you can trust it with your deepest secrets, so to speak, that you decide what it shares with whom. So it can really help you. And that kind of personal assistant would be almost like a little angel on your shoulder, that it can help you make better decisions in life, you know. And that would be true for whether it's healthcare or the politicians you want to vote for, dealing with fake news. It can help you sort through these things because it'll basically be smart. you know.
Well, when that does come out, you have a customer here, because I love the concept of it. I mean, you know, Google tries to do it now, and they may have some of the personalized stuff, you know. So I have my news feed that gives me gambling law, because I'm a consultant in the casino space as well. So it comes out with gambling law, poker news stories, casino news stories, and things like that. It knows I like the cryptocurrency markets, at least the blockchain side of the technology. It feeds me stories there. But now it also has learned, but I had to tell it that I'm tired of hearing COVID stories, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to turn it off in my news feed that, you know, it says, do you want to hear about this anymore? And again, I'm not anti-vax or anything like that, but I had COVID already. I got, you know, my vaccine from God. I'm okay. You know, if I get the flu, I don't go out and get a flu shot. So anyway, the point is that it's not private, though, because I'm sure as I'm breathing, they're sharing that information with advertisers and marketers everywhere.
Of course, that's their business model. And, you know, so you're getting it for free, but you're selling your soul.
Yeah. So the point is right. The happy medium, or the not even the happy medium, the flip side to that is where it's developed on a personal level, but yet, you know, there's a word in the English language called greed. And, you know, Gordon Gekko said greed is good. And I love the movie and things like that. But the problem, and again, I know we're off on a huge tangent here, and I apologize to our listeners, but I think it's important. You know, you think about what really grinds my gears is I watch television and I see a commercial for every other commercial is for some sort of medication. And then the other ones are for healthcare facilities. So, you know, they're advertising for hospitals in expensive ad slots where I'm thinking, you know, that's not really the Hippocratic thing to do, you know?
Correct. Yeah.
It just becomes about the Benjamins. And that's my fear, is that everything is all about the money, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, this is what I hope will happen, is that, you know, these personal assistants will become something that everybody wants, that can basically cut through that layer, you know, really give you good advice. But as you say, that the current systems don't have the right motive. They don't have the right motivation, because why would they provide this to you free of charge? Well, they're obviously making money out of it, you know, by selling your information. But more importantly, they really don't have the level of intelligence. I mean, you can't have a conversation with Google Assistant or Siri, you know. It's a kind of a one-shot thing. You can tell it, do this for me, you know, close the curtains or whatever. But you can't say, hey, can you help me think through whether I should take this job or get into this business opportunity, you know? That's where, you know, it can help you think things through.
And what's the timeline for something like that to be a reality, do you think?
So at the moment, I usually answer that question by saying it's measured more in dollars than in time, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And the reason is right now, big data approaches, deep learning, machine learning, has been so incredibly successful over the last 8-9 years that it's sucking all the oxygen out of the air for any other approach. But those systems are narrow AI, and they cannot provide that kind of intelligence that we're talking about here. So it really depends on how quickly money flows into what DARPA calls the third wave of AI. So the first wave was Deep Blue expert systems, or what's called good old-fashioned AI. And that dominated AI for decades. And over the last 10 years or so, it's really shifted into the second wave, which is deep learning, machine learning, big data approaches, statistical approaches. And they've been very, very successful in many areas, you know, like we spoke about the improvements in speech recognition, image recognition, and of course, targeted advertising, big data, targeted advertising. But that's not going to get us to a truly intelligent system. So DARPA talk about a third wave of AI that really is designed specifically to provide the cognitive abilities, the thinking ability, the reasoning, the interactive learning ability, deep understanding. And it really depends on how soon more money flows into developing that kind of AI or AGI.
Interesting. All right. Well, for our listeners out there who have the means to and the want to do something like that, what's the best way they can get a hold of you, Peter?
Yeah, through the company website, igo.ai. The links to my article. You could also just email me at peter@igo.ai. My articles are also on medium.com. So if you search for my name, Peter Voss, on medium.com, you'll also see I've written quite a lot about AI and ethics and free will and all sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I know it didn't really tie in specifically to loyalty, but I think in some way our listeners would have enjoyed the conversation. So if they do want to reach out to you, I'll put that in the show notes as well. I want to thank you for your time, Peter. I know that's the only thing that we all do have, which is finite in the sense that we can't live forever. And I want to thank our listeners for being loyal listeners, investing some of their valuable time with us. If you feel we've earned your trust and we would appreciate a 5-star review on your favorite podcast streaming service. That's how we grow. If you know someone else who might enjoy listening to the show, please do share. To reference this and other Loyalty Minute episodes, please visit theloyaltyminute.com. Thanks again, Peter. Speak to you soon.
Well, thank you, Rob. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for your next edition of the Loyalty Minute.